Okay. So, today, well, just a few announcements. The homework is due on Wednesday, and also you should turn in your final paper topic. And that should be a research paper, of which you'll write a 10-page paper, as well as give you a talk and a general review article about the field with which the article is about. Okay. And today we're going to talk about more nerves, and in particular ion channels. And we're going to discuss, after a review of last time, we're going to discuss what the conformational changes within an ion channel are that enable the nerve to actually fire. And just as a review, of course, we have a nerve, and we have some sort of stimulation over here. It generates an action potential, which is a flow of electrical currents, and it does this by a combination of sodium and also potassium channels. What they do is, initially, there is a voltage across the membrane. If you say that the 0 volts here, you have about minus 0.1 volts on the inside. And what happens is, at one end of the nerve, you have some calcium or sodium enter, which brings this somewhat positive, causes this to open, some sodium flows. It causes this to be even further positive. You get diffusion of the sodium. It causes the next guy to open, and then it goes along. The reason it doesn't propagates down rather than propagates in both directions is because the sodium channels, after they open, they spontaneously close. Also, when the sodium channel potentially it opens, and then it closes, and then potassium ions open, and it brings the voltage back to where it was initially. Okay, so just to see that you actually have this all in your heart and soul, what I want you to do is put what happens at number one, the yellow, what happens at number two, the green, what happens at number three, the sort of peak, and four and five, in terms of sodium and potassium channels opening. So it's time to be awake. Why don't we put in a 0 point, and that is why the potential is about minus 60 or minus 70 millivolts. Janet, looking perplexed as usual.
I wasn't here last class, so I have no idea.
Oh, I see. There is the. I hope I posted it. Did I? Anybody look? Did I post last week's lecture notes?
Diffusion, there was one missing, there was diffusion two.
Yeah, but
one's missing, but this nerve is up.
It is up there. Okay. Yeah, those are coming. They're actually going to be huge also, but if you have a fast connection. Wednesday, I will be giving you homework on nerves and ion channels. Okay. So, how many of you are finished? Whether that means getting it or not? Okay. Okay, so initially we have about minus 60. So 0 volts and minus 60 millivolts. And what determines that? Yeah.
The cell builds up a concentration gradient of sodium and potassium at a different size.
Okay, and actually, is it because of sodium or potassium?
Potassium.
Okay, we have one sodium and one potassium. Okay. So why do you think it's sodium?
I thought that the channels only let sodium through, but I could have reversed it.
Why do you think it's potassium?
Because the concentration of potassium inside the cell is higher than outside.
The sodium is. Millimolar. This is the sodium concentration outside. And this is what it's inside. And for potassium, essentially, it's reversed. Okay, and so what is happening is the sodium ions. The potassium ions essentially are in equilibrium over here, and they flow out, and so that means there's a few more positive charges here than here, and so it ends up being about minus 60 millivolts, and the sodium channels are completely closed initially. It's okay. And in fact, how did we determine the value that minus 60 millivolts? What determines it? Sukrit? Sure, you sort of did a little wiggle, so. Right, and the Nernst equation comes from where?
From the probability.
Right.
Inside.
That's right. From the partition function, what essentially is the positive ions flow because there's a gradient there, and that, but as positive ions flow up here, there's a negative. There's an electrical force opposing the further flow of potassium. And where they're about equal, it turns out, is about 60 millivolts or thereabouts. Okay, so now we're into the number one. So what is happening at number one? No. No, you can't, yeah?
Sodium channels
closed,
but the calcium channels
open. The sodium ions closed, but I thought the sodium ions initially were closed.
So they have the
Don't they have to build up like a certain, there has to be a certain amount of building for the room?
They have to build up what? Well, remember what we had is initially, for example, we had some calcium ions that when were injected, because, for example, you have some, your muscles put out some calcium or your touch cells put out some sodium or something like that. So the plus ions flow inside, and then what happens? So you had it a little bit backwards. Yeah?
The sodium channels open up first.
Okay, that's right. Then the sodium ions open up first. Okay, and then what happens? What? Where's number two? Okay. So one thing that you guys are clearly not with it. I mean, it's obvious. So I expect you to be with it a little bit more. So you can always review the lecture that I had, especially if you weren't here. Okay. So what happens in the green section, number two? Yeah.
Sodium diffuses and brings the sodium channels farther down.
Okay. So more sodium channels open because you have the it's more positive because sodium has flown. Okay? And what about number three?
The sodium channel closes.
Good. The sodium channel closes. Why does the sodium channel close? They spontaneously shut off. They're open for a little while and then automatically close. Okay? So the sodium channels close. And number four, what happens at number four? Yeah?
Potassium channels open.
Good. The potassium channels open. Okay? And when that happens, the voltage is starting to go more negative. Why is that? Do you know?
It's just more the higher concentration of potassium, and once that was to go out again,
say it again?
Is it just because we still have this higher concentration of potassium on the inside of the membrane that wants to leave?
That's right. That's right. A lot of potassium, they open, and potassium flows. Yeah.
So they're open. The potassium channels are open at the start of it, and then do they close somewhere along the line?
Ah, good. It turns out that there are two types of potassium channels. One which are just open. Period. The voltage independent, and there is another one that determines essentially the resting potential, and then there is another one that is dependent on voltage, and these are the guys that open, but the ones that are dependent on voltage over here, they open later than the sodium ones. The sodium opens quickly and then closes quickly. The potassium channels open more slowly and then stay on longer. So the potassium opens, and so basically it starts to drive it back down to its equilibrium position at minus 70 millivolts. Okay? And then eventually the potassium channels close. And that's here, and you're basically back to your original potential over here. It turns out that you have somewhat of an excess, which actually it can be accounted for easily, but in fact not in our simple model. Yeah.
Do the potassium channels spontaneously close? Is there?
Yes.
Okay. So just like the sodium,
just like the sodium. That's right. In general, they're a little bit slower than they're slower to come on and slower to come off. Okay? And if you look so at the conductance, the sodium channel rises quickly and then falls as these guys shut off. And the potassium conductance, it's somewhat slower than the sodium, but then comes on, but again, once again, shuts off, and the sum is essentially equal to that. Okay? Are there questions? Although I would suggest that you go back and you basically review this because, you know, it might be on the final exam. Okay. And now what we want to know is, are the ion channels, are they digital, all or nothing? And what you can do is you can take an individual ion channel and you can measure the conductance through it. And the answer, by the way, that I guess I don't, oh yeah, that there are about 10 million charges, that is 10 million either potassium ions or sodium ions per second flowing. So that ends up being about 1 picoamp per channel, which actually you can measure if you have voltage is equal to I times R, and if R is really large, like a gigaohm, 10 to the ninth, then times I, the current, 1 picoamp, the 1 picoamp is 10 to the minus 12, gigaohm is 10 to the minus, how much, what is a gigaohm? 10 to the minus 9. So the combination is, that's 10 to the minus...
Positive 9?
Yeah. So I is 10 to the minus 12 amps times R 10 to the plus, this is a gigaohm. So that's equal to about 10 to the minus third volts, which is reasonable. I mean, it's not a huge signal, but it's very much measurable. Although, remember that you need a gigaohm seal, otherwise the voltage is too small to measure. And in fact, what we find is you take a single ion channel, you change the voltage already, and you look at the current. And you see that, in fact, it's always equal, and basically, in this case, about minus 1.5 picoamps. And it shuts off automatically, and when it turns on is actually variable. So, in fact, if you take many of these channels together, you get something that looks like this, which is exactly what the sodium or the potassium looks like. Yeah.
Do you know if they all stayed out, like open about the same amount of time, or whether it was pretty variable?
It's completely variable. It's random. And in fact, you can look at the amount of time that they stay on, and you'll actually see what will be an exponential. You can get the off rate, and you can get the on rate also. In fact, that's how you know, in fact, the sodium versus potassium, that sodium, the on rate is generally faster than the potassium, and the off rate in general is faster again with potassium. Okay? So fundamentally, we have this digital device adding up to a qualitative thing which looks like an action potential or looks like a nerve firing. Okay, so it's either on or off, and the probability of opening with time decreases following a voltage jump. Okay, but now what I'm going to do is I'm going to make you do a slight calculation. Oh. Not quite yet. I want to be clear about what this current actually is, in that fundamentally for example, sodium flowing. There, initially it's off, and then it flows. So this is called the ionic current. Namely, ions are flowing from outside in, or for potassium, inside out. Okay, there's another type of current. Okay, so that's this. Now, there's another type of current in that the sodium or the potassium channels are made up of proteins. And some of the amino acids making up the proteins, some of them have positive and some of them have negative charges. In particular, there's a net excess of positive charges, namely basically arginines and to a certain extent lysines. And so if you look, you'll see, in fact, that there are positive charges in the ion channel itself. These are called gating charges. And it's actually and when the sodium or the potassium starts flowing, in fact, the positive charges move somewhat, and a moving charge is a current. And you can actually detect that moving, the so-called gating current. Okay? It turns out that that will be very important in terms of actually knowing why the pore opens or closes. Okay, so the okay, now this is what you're going to have to do. So you see over here, Here, let's say you have you're at minus 135 millivolts. In that case, you're almost always closed, and occasionally you see, boom, it opens and then it spontaneously closes again. If you do it a little bit higher, a little bit less negative, it's closed, it opens. It opens, it's closed, it's open. So mostly it's closed, but now you actually go and you make everything less negative. And here, then, you have some probability of being closed and some probability of being open. And in fact, if you do it, you'll find, you can imagine that there's a two-state equilibrium, closed and open. And you actually see that it looks like this. And the midpoint potential is actually at about minus 80 millivolts. So what I want you to do is I want you to take a very simple model where you say the closed state, the open state is some value, and then the closed state, its energy depends on what the voltage is. So its voltage will be equal to, its energy will be equal to Q times V closed. And what I want you to do is I want you to derive an equation like this. And in fact, then we'll take this equation that looks something like this and we'll fit it. And we'll fit it and we'll get a sense of how many charges, how many gating charges actually have to move. So, go to it. I can tell that some of you are a little bit confused, and feel free to ask me questions. Ru, if you want to, you can work with somebody. As you should get the sense that you end up using their partition function, you know, quite a bit. How are we doing? Zal? Yeah. Do you have it?
I think it's just film gap distribution, right?
Just what?
Semiconductor, we learn this kind of film gap distribution. You have two states. And if the temperature is absolute zero, you have step function. And if its temperature is finite temperature, you have finite weight of this second bands.
Yeah. And so do you have a formula which you could fit to a curve like this? So you you can tell the amount of charge, that is gating charge, that goes across?
This is a formula you actually have, right?
Well,
when you add the first probability or what you probably add together to get this formula.
Yeah.
What's the y-axis?
Y-axis is this is the number of open channels. So the probability of it being open.
This
you should get something that looks like this. Who got this?
What's your V50?
V50 is the 50% voltage. That is the probability of being open is 1/2, because at V equals 50, that's equal to 0. So that's equal to 1, and the probability of being open is 1/2. Okay, so who can derive this for me? Okay, go ahead.
All right, well, it's just an alternate distribution where the energy, it's the e to the energy being open, negative energy open over kT over the sum of the energies. So you have two states, so it's just going to be the energy of being open again plus the energy of being closed. And then you can kind of define that point as 0. So that means these are both going to go to 1. It's going to be 1 over 1 plus the energy, and then that's kind of to normalize it, use the V50. And this is just the probability of being open.
Okay. Questions for Tyler? Okay. So then what we do is we fit this curve, and we get a V50, and in this case happens to be at 30 millivolts. And what you in fact, I guess you can say that there are a certain number of charges that are going across. And it turns out the answer is you get about 13 electrons per charge per channel. Is that as the charges get steeper, does the curve get shallower or... As the number of charges goes up, does the curve get more steep or less steep? How is that?
Because the Q in the denominator will increase.
That's right. Basically, what you can think of it, if the thing has zero charges, doesn't even know what the voltage actually is. And so it'll be like this. If it has a lot of charge, the voltage moves a little bit, it's a huge force, and so, you know, boom. Okay. So now the question is, where does the 13 electronic charges per channel come from? And we will find that out by the end of the class. Okay. Why don't we summarize what we've done so far, and then we'll get to the gating charge. Okay, so how does a nerve action potential begin? The answer is there are certain ligand-gated channels which release calcium or actually sodium in the case of like pressure cells. Why is there a non-zero resting potential? The ion gradient is selective to sodium, and so that determines the non-zero resting potential. And in fact, it's there because there's a sodium-potassium transporter initially that determines the differential concentrations. What determines the magnitude of the action potential? Well, the answer has to do with the Nernst potential. And actually, it has to do with the permeability, how easy it is for sodium and potassium to flow, which actually we haven't talked about. What brings the electrical potential back to the resting place? And it turns out it's the voltage-gated potassium channels. How does the potential travel as opposed to simply spread? The ion channels potentially, they do close. Okay, what is the structure of the ion channel? That, in fact, has been partially solved. In fact, it won a Nobel Prize a couple of years ago. And we will get to that in the remainder of the talk. How do ion channels allow ions to flow? We'll get to that also. Turns out they have water-filled tubes. How does voltage turn on and off the channel? Well, we now know that it has positively charged so-called gating currents that open and close. How does the gate move, and can we measure such a small angstrom change? And in fact, we can. And in fact, that is one of my research. It's about using FRET, which we've discussed, and we'll see that there's a rotation that goes on. How is an ion channel selective for sodium or potassium? Remember, this over here has to let sodium go in, but not potassium. And this has to let potassium go in and sodium. And the difference between the atomic radii of sodium and potassium, it's real, but it's very small. It's like, I don't know, like an angstrom difference. So somehow these sodium and potassium channels are amazingly selective. In fact, the sodium channel can be as much as like 10,000 times more permeable to sodium than for potassium. So it's really amazing. In fact, we will explain exactly how that happens. Okay, are channels analog or digital? And the answer is they're most certainly digital. Okay. So at this point, we're going to study the structure of the ion channels and see if we can understand about this gate, what it looks like, and how many charges that there are associated with it. And this is essentially what the Nobel Prize was won for. Why don't we take 3 minutes or so? When do you have the answer for me?
I don't know. the weekly basis is working well, but tomorrow I should be able to do some lysine.
Do you know when the 10-page paper or the presentation's due? Are there any, like, set dates?
No.
No.
On Wednesday, I'll have it for you.
The thing is, I know you buy the 8th nanometers because I heard from Rinald that Amit sees 90 of 8th nanometers in vivo. So.
In vivo?
Yeah.
In vivo, not in vitro. Wow.
So he's figured out some way to.
Well, he often figures out ways of doing it, and it's difficult for other people to do it, but. I trust that you will figure it out. Wow.
The presentation is on that paper too, so we're done with the first presentation, we're doing the second one on the paper.
That's correct.
Just something in science and nature again.
Yeah. Essentially, it's a repeat of your first one, although it's a different topic. Okay, why don't we continue? The first thing to realize, as I've sort of drawn, is that these things are largely a tetramer. In particular, we're studying mostly about sodium and potassium channels. And we know they're a tetramer because you can see in each of these, they look like 4 nanometers. They look like tetramers. And they're about 8 nanometers by 8 nanometers by about 5 nanometers. And the 5 nanometers makes sense because that's approximately the width of a membrane. Okay, and so what has happened recently, actually, is in 2003, is Rod McKinnon crystallized a channel, and that in fact you originally did it in Nature, but has since come out with, I think, like a dozen papers in Nature and Science and Cell. It's really just an amazing series of work. And what he did is, at first, he published a bacterial analog, and this is shown only with two of the four subunits. So there's another one in front and in back. And there's a couple of things to know, to notice. One is you see a motif in an amino acid, which in fact is what the pore tends to go on, where the pore tends to be. So it's flowing through here, and in this case it's closed. In general, an ion channel either is open or closed. In some cases it turns out he's gotten it closed, in other cases he's gotten it open. In no case does he have it both in open and closed, which is, turns out, a major issue. Okay, but in general it's thought that it goes through here. And notice, in fact, that there's a huge water cavity right in here, which is good, because when this guy opens, the positive ions is essentially just going through water. And that's important, because why is that important? Because if it was having to go through lipid is extremely hydrophobic, and for a positive ion, let's say lipid is here, for a positive ion to go through the lipid membrane would in general be impossible. So it can take a so-called free ride, and in essence it can in fact go what is diffusion limited, which it corresponds to something like 10 to the 9th channels, positive ions per second, which is in fact exactly what is seen. Furthermore, what's really something about this is this accounts for the membrane, channel selectivity in terms of sodium versus potassium. Because what it is when they're in water, the sodium is hydrated, has water is bound to it. And same thing with potassium. So what happens is it comes here, and potassium or sodium comes in, and it has to give up its water molecules that it's bound to. In general, that's extremely expensive energetically. It can be like 100 kT. So there's no way that it will ordinarily do that. But what it does when it comes here, it sees the C double bond O. What is the structure again of a protein or amino acids? What? Yes. Okay. No?
COH. Carbon.
Okay, where is that?
The other end.
The other end? Okay, what's in between?
Hydrogen.
Hydrogen, right?
Carbon.
That's right. That's an amino acid. And, for example, if it... But notice it has this C double bond O. That's extremely important because, in fact, an ion can give up its water molecule or one of its water molecules and instead bind to the C double bond O. And in fact, then the potassium, for example, ion becomes dehydrated and bound only to the COO of the protein. And it turns out if you separate them or put them together just a little bit, the energies will essentially be exactly the same for the potassium bound to water versus the potassium bound to the carboxylates of the proteins. And that, in fact, is what determines the selectivity. That potassium channels essentially move this such that there is no energy for a potassium ion to flow, to be hydrated, to be dehydrated, and then get to be hydrated again. For sodium channel, it's slightly different because the atomic radius is slightly different. And a sodium channel, in fact, goes through and once again gives up its water ligated to the COO and then goes through and re-gets the hydration. Okay? So this was, you know, an extremely important insight that we got. Yeah?
A little confused. So potassium comes in as bound to water. And then in a potassium channel, it loses, it breaks its bond to water and bonds to the ion channel itself. And then
that's right.
On its flow, it kind of breaks off again and goes back to water.
That's right.
But a sodium coming in, it would just not fit. Is that the problem? Or
it would not release its water molecules. Because if it released the water molecules and then tried to bind to the CO of the protein, the CO is a little bit bigger or a little bit smaller, and so it would be very energetically costly.
So the holes only for you, the potassium ion by itself or the sodium ion by itself?
But yes, by itself. In fact, that was a big mystery because it turns out which is which? Who knows whether a potassium ion is smaller or bigger than a sodium?
Bigger.
Okay. So potassium is bigger. Okay. Okay. And so the potassium ion is coming through, but it turns out potassium. Let's see. But in fact, the Okay, this is true for the non-hydrated, but the hydrated is actually smaller, and so what? So the potassium ion, it comes, and for a potassium channel, if a sodium ion were to come, it will actually never quite reach into it, and so it can't get through in that sense. Okay. Oh, I'd written it right over here.
So, that is to say, if it's some other ion, if the hydrated size is smaller than that, it can pass through the potassium.
No, it turns out that if the radius is, for example, smaller or larger, in fact, it will have trouble giving up its water molecules to get it in here. And if it by trouble, it means that the difference in energy between the hydrated form and the dehydrated form bound to this protein will be enormous, the amount of energy. And so the probability of it being here, we can just calculate via the partition function. Okay? Questions? Yeah?
So can they actually image the difference between the two channels? Or can you tell the difference from the images?
In between the two channels, meaning sodium and potassium? It turns out they have. The potassium was the first channel to be there to get the X-ray crystallography, but in the last, I think it's 2 years, they've gotten the sodium channel, and in fact, it's just worked out perfectly. Okay, and so this was back in 2003. Okay, and basically, this is the whole thing, and you can see here's all four. And in fact, a top view, you can see right here the potassium ion just fits right through. In fact, here's with just two of them over here. Okay, and we wanted to see the potassium. The potassium fit right over here. This is a breakout of this, and here is the potassium ions going through just perfectly. In fact, here the whole thing you see is that essentially over here, up top, it's water, and in fact, over here, there's a big water cavity as well. And in fact, over here is where it must be the dehydration. Okay. Okay. And so, what I'm saying is that in some cases, that you can get a 10,000-fold selectivity of sodium over potassium. And as I mentioned, the sodium channel has been crystallized. Okay, so if you have 10,000-fold selectivity, what is the energy for sodium as opposed to potassium? And is it reasonable? I mean, of course, we in fact know that it's reasonable. So how would you calculate? How would you calculate that? Yeah.
Is it the Boltzmann?
Exactly, being in one state and the other. And in which case, it's actually going as an exponential function of the energy. So what, 10,000 volts seems like a lot. E to the something has to equal to 10,000 fold. So in fact, the answer is 9.2 kT, which is really not that all much. So in fact, you can readily do this and get 10,000 fold selectivity. Yeah?
I mean, they have to let some small fraction of other things through the channels as well. You know, like the selectivity on other ions passing through or other just molecules?
Yeah. For sodium, it's maybe 1,000 or 10,000 greater than potassium, which is the overwhelmingly large fraction. There are other ions such as calcium and magnesium, and in general, those are way down also. Although it certainly depends. I think that there are some channels, well, that have, let's say, a 100-fold difference, although I'm actually not sure that there are any that low. Okay, and you were asking about the sodium channel. Here's the potassium channel, S1 through S6. Remember, in S5, S6 is where the actual pore is formed. And sodium channel is very similar to this, but in fact, actually, it's made of a continuous peptide, where sodium channel is four of these. And here, there's four of them again. So it's all quite similar. And remember, we said 13 charges which went across? Okay, interestingly, in S, so you go and you look at these guys, and you wouldn't expect there to be positive charges in here because it's surrounded by lipids. But in fact, you find one S4, which in fact does have positive charges. In fact, there's a lot of arginines. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 arginines. 7 times 4, because you have 4 of these, that's 28 positive charges. So there's plenty of positive charges. And in fact, apparently, evidently, they're in part not fully charged, because in fact you have 13 of these instead of 28, or 13 divided by 4 is about 3 electronic charges per tetramer. Okay. So what we said is there is no energetic barrier going from the outside to the dehydrated to the inside. Basically, there's no energetic cost. Also, it's interesting, in fact, that you can essentially have a series of the ions. In here, basically, they just sort of line up 1, 2, 3, 4, and so in fact, you can get very rapid movement. And in fact, you can get on the order of 10 to the 8th ions per second. Okay. And here is just showing schematically what the thing looks like. Here's the internal, here's the extracellular. And so it comes in here, it's aqueous, it goes through here, and it releases. It's hydrated here and hydrated over here. Okay. Now, one thing that I've mentioned is in the pore that he crystallized, there was only in S5 and S6. There wasn't, in any case, a voltage sensitivity. And in fact, again, in a phenomenal study, Rod McKinnon crystallized not only the bacterial channel, but the eukaryotic channel that had S1 through S6. And amazingly, what he found was S5 and S6 were here more or less in the square. And the S1 through S4, which is the voltage sensitive nature, was actually on the outside. And in fact, it turns out that there was real problems with this structure. But since that point, he's actually gotten better structures. And it probably looks like this, where in here is S5 and S6. Right in the middle here is forming the pore, and S1 through S4, which is your voltage sensitivity, is on the outside. Okay, and I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to wait till next time to discuss what actually is moving. Is it, for example, a guy that over here, and then it rotates, or does it translate, or does it do some combination of both? So if and we'll talk about how we can actually see such of a small change, and the answer will be using FRET. We can see angstrom type changes.